We're recording?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, hey guys. So this is an interesting week, and all we can think about is the Lagos Startup Expo. Our tech point, right? The Lagos Startup Expo is supposed to be this huge, massive opportunity to come and exhibit that awesome stuff you're building. And, well, the marketing language has been saying awesome stuff, but the core of it is, if you're solving a problem for anybody, whether it's for customers or for business, so are you helping kids access better education? Are you helping people make payments? Are you helping freelancers manage their work well? Are you helping fashion designers build really, really good stuff? So are you helping startups handle their legal issues? Are you helping them design their office spaces? These are the platforms like the Lagos Startup Expo that help you showcase this product and help you interact with customers in a way that you've never seen before. And of course, if you're a founder that cares about customers in any way, shape or form, this event is for you. Trust me. Yeah, and I hope you guys are excited too. Why are you guys looking at me like that? You guys are not excited. Oh boy.
No. We did not want to interrupt so that they can use that snippet for something else.
Oh, nice thinking. Nice. Are you sure that was the intention?
Yeah, that was
Was that your intention? Or you were just waiting for me to finish talking?
I don't know.
Who finished up without they can?
Oh, yeah. So, of course, if you're listening to this, you guys can cut and join in. If you're listening to this, head over to the Lagos Startup Expo website, lagosstartupexpo.com. Yeah, we secure that domain very, 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 very quickly. But yeah, lagosstartupexpo.com. And we call it the Lagos Startup Expo, but it's more of a regional thing. So if you're offering any service from any region in Nigeria or West Africa, all roads lead to Lagos, actually. So Lagos is like the economic hub for West Africa, basically. So head over to lagosstartupexpo.com and you can reach out to us, news@techpoint.africa, or more importantly, reach out to the business team, business@techpoint.africa, and they'll be willing to answer any and every question you have. Again, if you really care about having customers, come to the Lagos Startup Expo. So, this week, we're going to be talking about a bunch of things that have to do with what customers have been experiencing in the past few weeks. So, there's this issue with virtual card payments, right? Customers in Nigeria, all over Nigeria, are having issues paying for stuff, like things as little as Udemy courses. I think the only thing that I can pay with my bank app right now is Google Drive.
Google One.
Yeah, and I find it weird that that's the only thing you can pay with. Google is not missing out on any of the payments. It's fine. But YouTube Premium and all those other awesome stuff, well, yeah, but we saw an article on TechCrunch, Union 54 CEO Peshish Lambo talked about the experience with the whole chargeback fraud thing. Now, he mentioned chargeback fraud. What does chargeback fraud actually mean? So give us the context about Union 54. Why are they important to do this whole paying with dollars thing? Then what was the fraud thing that happened?
Okay, so the startups that give you your virtual dollar cards, or in some cases actual dollar cards, they need like a third party to provide this service. So the person just gives them access to the API and then they can now generate it. So the third party basically does the heavy lifting for them on the back end, and then they are able to maybe at the click of a button issue you a virtual dollar card. So Union 54 was a YC-backed company, and they were doing this for a lot of the Nigerian startups that were doing it. And sometime last year, we heard that they were packing up that service.
Are they Nigerian?
No, they are not. They are not.
Zambia, right?
Yeah, I think Zambian.
Yeah, okay.
So, well, at least the founder is Zambian.
Zambian.
So they packed up and they decided that they were going to pause that service for a while until they figure out. And there was a hint that, okay, the problem from this is it wasn't like a technical issue. It was more from the, they were having a lot of fraud. So you ask what chargeback fraud is. So if you make a payment and that payment fails, you can request, like, when you try to send money to me and it doesn't go through, and then your bank reports or they reverse that transaction, that's a chargeback. So the fraud there is now when I didn't make a payment, and then I go to my bank and I say, oh, I made a payment from Onome. And then the bank now has to refund me. And it's a big deal because businesses, yes. So they won't go to the person who they made the transaction to. That's why you're not hearing maybe a Jimmy telling you that they have chargeback fraud right now. So they're not going to the person.
But you said you didn't make any transaction.
Mm-hmm. So that's why it's fraudulent.
Yeah, but when, for instance, if I want to reach out to my bank for a failed transaction, they ask for the transaction ID.
Yeah.
So how does that fraud work without that transaction ID?
So the technical details are, there isn't a lot of technical details. So it's just me starting a claims process for a transaction that never happened.
But why would they answer me when I can't prove that I did the transaction?
Well, they won't come to the Union 54, for example. They are coming to maybe the banking partners that they are working with because Union 54 won't hold funds. So let's say you make a payment through a third party fintech, and normally you're going to dispute with your bank because a lot of the fraud or maybe a lot of the issues would come from your financial institution, not really from the service provider.
Which is why, so you said Union 54 will not hold funds, right?
Yeah.
So let's say I went to withdraw from an ATM. Mm. So I'm trying to use relatable example.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So what will now happen is when this happens, the bank will refund the money. But they will come back to the person who was issuing the card.
So MasterCard or Visa, for instance.
Yeah, and tell you, okay, chief, you are owing us X amount of money in chargebacks. Now, it's not a case of you going ahead to pay. You probably will have to pay them. In short, you definitely have to pay them. But the problem is that, so actually it's a big deal for a lot of startups, not just in Nigeria.
Mm.
And he mentioned it in that interview that startups across the world suffer from that. I can't remember the exact figures, but about $79 billion or so is lost to chargeback fraud annually. Mm. So that's huge for any business. And yeah, that was the major reason. So something he mentioned is that the problem wasn't coming from them. It was coming from the fintech startups they were protecting. So serving. So these guys did not have a very, very good way of finding out that they were being defrauded. So when that happens, it's now either they are passing the cost on to Union 54. So basically, it was a lot of hassle. And the thing is, he mentioned that they had to decline transactions like to safeguard themselves because they will have to pay. So they had to decline a lot of transactions. And as they were doing it, he mentioned that Netflix and a lot of other people who customers were trying to use these cards to pay for services, you're now calling them to find out why they were declining a lot of transactions. So it's not good for them as a business, but continuing the service, as you mentioned, would mean they will spend their money to pay back these frauds. I think he said in a very short while, they racked up to $500,000 in chargeback fraud.
Wow.
And if they had continued, this is, I think, 8 or 9 months since they stopped that service. If they had continued, they would have incurred more money. I think they raised maybe, was it $5 million or so? So if you did $500,000 in such a short period, I wonder how long before you finish all the money
that you raised.
Mm.
Okay.
So my question is, if the fraud, is it coming from customers?
Yeah,
it's coming from customers. So people that say they made a transaction and they claim the transaction did not happen. I mean, they claim the transaction failed, but no transaction actually happened in the first place. Which was why I was asking, share the Israeli transaction ID to identify. There's always a record, right?
Yeah.
If a transaction fails or if it did not. So are they formulating transaction IDs?
Well, it's not like it's casual people that are doing this. I mean, if I don't have some level of maybe technical skill, I probably will not be engaging in chargeback fraud. But it's not like, and it's also not, so you maybe have like content farms that here people are farming out or like just creating content. You could also have people who, this is their own, this is like their own specialty, ensuring that they defraud companies like this. And he mentioned that there was a particular startup that they found out that there were too many transactions being done. Then they reached out to them to say, oh, there are too many transactions being done on your end, what's happening? And then those guys said, I mean, it's normal, it's part of growth.
It's growth.
A few hours later, they reached out to me like, you guys are right, too. There's something wrong somewhere. So I mean, you may see that there's a lot of transactions in your end, and then it's not actual transactions. So they are just people trying to defraud you. So one thing he mentioned is very, I think we had an interview with, what's the guy again, Esige?
Esige Aguile.
And he talked about how fraud is a big deal in Nigeria, especially Nigerian fintech. And you always hear on Twitter people say, hug a fintech founder. And that's because these are like existential, how do you put it in that? Like these are problems that you will definitely face. Whether it's someone trying to defraud you, or maybe your service not working or something. So,
you know, the thing is, okay, I almost tweeted this or put it on my LinkedIn yesterday when I was in traffic. Well, the issue is, I'm usually angrier when I'm in traffic. So, I mean, the last time I posted something controversial on social media, it was in traffic. So,
she entered traffic.
But yeah, what I'm thinking, I mean, everybody's saying hug a fintech founder. I don't know why I don't pity them sometimes. Why? Okay, I know why I don't pity them sometimes. I mean, what they're doing is really hard. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
But if you're interviewing these guys, you're always hearing, yeah, we don't have competitors, we are collaborators. The sky is big enough for everybody to build. And how come a fraudster uses the same technique to defraud company A, then rinse it?
And
it doesn't even use hypo to rinse it. It just dip inside water. Then drops it inside company B.
And
then
works.
Company A and company B, who are collaborators and who this guy is big enough for everybody to flourish, don't talk to each other.
Well, I mean, I think it's obvious now that in reality, nobody is collaborating. Okay, well, not nobody.
A few of them are collaborating.
Not all of them. I think the collaboration is more on paper than in practice, because it would have been easy for you to say, oh, something like this happened, watch out for it, and then the next person is like able to take precautions before time. But I think it could be that, okay, yes, their job is difficult. I mean, everybody's job is difficult. Their job is difficult. But one of the reasons why I don't pity them a lot is that banks have been running financial services for decades. And yes, there was no social media and all for us to hype them up. But they've not been complaining and saying, oh,
they have the money to cover up. Fraud
has been happening though.
Yeah, of course it has been.
I think for banks, a lot of it is insider jobs.
Yeah. And then the fact that something happens and you try not to, and you try to cover it, which is something else that is curious. I mean, he mentioned that one of the reasons they didn't speak after that happened, like immediately after it happened, was that they were trying to weigh the possible effects.
Mm.
So if we speak, people we may have to mention the startup that was involved. Mm. And if we mention the startup that is involved, what effect does it have on that startup's business?
Mm.
Which makes sense. If they are maybe the kind of startup that, I don't know, maybe they hold money and people will feel, oh, maybe we should go pull out our money, because yes, it's a very, very touchy topic. But that makes me wonder, how many things do we have to not talk about because of the supposed effect on the ecosystem?
Maybe it's not, this is not the right place to be talking about it on the podcast, and I'm sorry, listeners, but something clicked in my head a few days ago, and I realized that, okay, the startups, the reason why most of these guys actually caught foreign media.
Mm.
So if, for instance, Union 54 CEO wanted to make amends with customers, where is he going to go to have this kind of interview? If he wants to make amends with investors, where is he going to go to have this kind of interview? I'm not going to say anything more than that. But for the case of, say, hey, nobody is going to talk because of how it's going to affect the ecosystem, it's a very, very tricky subject. And you have to realize that, okay, the more these companies grow, the more even we media companies also grow, right? Tech Point growing in prominence, Tech About growing in prominence, all are a direct reflection of the ecosystem that's also growing alongside. The same thing can be said about TechCrunch. If the Silicon Valley US tech ecosystem wasn't as big, maybe TechCrunch wouldn't be as big. Same thing with Sifted, Europe, or Tech in Asia, all these other platforms. So I get the argument, right? But as journalists, we need to find a balance, right?
Oh, yeah, it's not even from the media. I mean, of course, the media doesn't. No,
the media is the one that is doing the talking, isn't
yeah,
it?
No, no, yeah. Well, we
or
start conversations in some cases.
Talk.
Yeah, but when people always say those lines that it's going to hurt the ecosystem, I feel that you're just trying to like hide the real
like
you don't want accountability.
Like the founder of Two Unicorns said, if it's better we don't tell the story.
Yeah. you know what's funny is that for so long we went on crying about how we need to tell the African story.
It's fine.
And then
fine.
When we started telling the African story, it now changed to we need to tell the nice parts of the African story. And here's the thing, it's not just founders that do it. I've seen a few people who say that they are telling stories that the stories in Africa are not just wars, political instability, but these are our stories. If we are being realistic, these are our stories. And Chimamanda talked about the danger of a
single story, right?
We can't make the same mistake that the Western media made, where they focused on only the bad side. And then because we are trying to balance things up, it's one of the reasons why we don't have like very, very good accounts of our history. So in the early days, we are trying to dispute the fact that we are not the dark continent. And in doing that, a lot of our history was told around our exploits. We never ever talked about all the bad things that happened in Africa because they happened. We are human beings. And then all of a sudden, we now maybe 70 years later, we're now looking at how to tell a complete history. So in order for us to get this complete story, I think it's important that, yes, we tell the good stories, but we also tell the bad or not so good stories.
Yeah, yeah. It makes sense, right? And talking about fintech sharing information and telling all these stories together, there's an initiative from the government called Open Banking, right? We talked about it a few weeks ago. Then we saw an exclusive story on Techabao that talked about the fact that the CBN wants NIBs to control open banking. Now, in its very concept, it starts to have us thinking, okay, what is the plan? And if it's supposed to be open banking, why do you want to have one central body control it? So we didn't jump on the story because we're not able to confirm from our own end. But I'm hearing that, okay, the CBN has backed out and all of that. But the question I have in my head is, for open banking to truly work, what kind of regulation needs to guide this? Because, we are talking about fintech sharing data with themselves, right? Ezigi mentioned something in the last podcast. Like, it's not so simple to just ask fintechs
to share.
To just be sharing data. They might call themselves collaborators on Twitter.
They are still business
people. But they are still business people. They are still competitors, right? Do you need to have central bodies or companies whose primary responsibility is to hold this data? So the lending sector has credit bureaus, right? The banks don't report to themselves, they report to the credit bureaus. Now, do we need to have that for all the fintechs? And we heard of fintech CEOs coming together to build something like that, right? But in the context of open banking, because open banking is a lot more open than just fintech sharing data, right? We're going to be involving retail chains, we're going to be involving property management companies, logistics, right? So what is leading me to ask questions, what are the things that we need to actually put in place for? Maybe it shouldn't be, I should be asking the question, but let us ask it down first.
Okay, so if you want to get an answer to that question, visit techmentor.africa on Tuesday, you get an answer to your question.
Okay, on Tuesday?
Yes, next week Tuesday, you get an answer to that question.
Okay, so you're not answering it now?
No, I'm not.
You're not answering it now. Okay, so we should just move on.
We can't give everything up. So
we should just move on.
My thought is, why I understand the way the Nigerian system works sometimes, where you have to subsume something under another thing to make it look like, okay, we own this. So, but I'm thinking, what could be the implication of NIBSS taking over
open banking?
Because they all have to do with data a lot. And NIBS, let's say, it has been, like, it's one of the things that have supported the workings of fintech in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
It gets, when it comes to transactions and, like, moving money from one bank to another, with a snap, you get. NIBS has been very resourceful for that. And it has been a framework that works. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Bringing open banking to NIBS, I don't. Is there like a negative connotation to it, or?
It's kind of more like, so NIBS is kind of like that. It sits in that gray area where you are not sure if it's a competitor or a regulator. That's what NIBS is like.
That could
be why they are worried.
Skeptical about it. I get.
It sits in that gray area, right? NIBS was like a coalition between the CBN itself.
Yes, okay.
And the banks.
It's like owned by a private company on its own. So now I get.
Kind of feels like a private company. But it kind of feels like, oh, this is like the regulators, an extension of the CBN in the payment space, right? And yeah, don't get me wrong, they've done a fantastic job over the years, but which is why I'm asking, what is the right way to actually, because I understand that, okay, for you to have this open, there's a framework, which of course we'll be discussing on Tuesday next week, there's an open banking framework. So I'm sure in that framework, there are guidelines on how this open banking should be regulated and everything should be done properly. So yeah,
so I still think the CBN should be in charge.
I mean, I think that's still the
yeah idea. But NIBS, if it was CBN, we know that, okay, it's regulator that is doing this, but NIBS is,
I mean, even the CBN they are gradually entering into that gray area. So it's no longer a case of, oh, we are strictly regulating your industry. They are entering,
that's,
I mean,
coming, as SCG said,
you see, it's a very
tough market. Like when a regulator is trying to act like a competitor,
it's
it
a
becomes
problem.
Dicey, because and you're never on the on
you
the
don't know
end.
So it's one thing for me to have issues with a competitor, it's another thing now to have an issue with a competitor regulator. Like, you don't know.
You never win.
How do you win?
I mean, I imagine the scare NIPOS gave us in 2020, where they wanted to deduct 2% of the revenue of logistic companies. Thank God that policy did not see the light of day. The NIDA Act came, they wanted. And yeah, trust me, a lot of things are happening in that digital space that we're not talking about outside, in terms of regulators actually starting to act like competitors. They want. They no longer want to be just be the umpire. They want to actually be a player. Imagine you're a referee. He's also one of the players.
I can't imagine.
No. The best way to capture this is wrestling, where you are doing a tag team match, and the referee is one of the wrestlers.
Right? How?
So
if he's not at top, no, at the one on top, nobody's going to count three.
Well, maybe as you're on the ground, he joins the person that is pinning you down. To pin you down and then choosing the other hand.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, it's a nice one, right? And a lot of things could happen. You could see people start rebelling against the government. You could see the government, people in the government start revealing things, just like Twitter employees.
Yeah. No, actually, it's not like it's confirmed that it's an employee that did it. Mm. But what happened was that Twitter source code was leaked on GitHub. GitHub is like a repository for
code management.
Collaborate. So some people put their codes there and put it behind walls, say they are closed. Some make theirs open source. So Twitter source code was leaked, supposedly leaked, and well, they've gained access back, but it was some people said that it might be an ex-employee that was fired in 2022 when Elon Musk came in. Elon Musk came in.
Elon Musk.
I didn't say that.
Elon Musk.
Oh, boy. You are my witness. I didn't say anything like that.
These people are witness.
I was thinking to myself, yeah. So when Elon Musk came in as the CEO, so I think this is just one of the things that we get to talk about when you fire people without being humane about it. We understand the fact that people have to go. You've made terrible economic decision in the past. So you have to remedy it. Was it last year that we mentioned that Amazon actually gained almost a million employees, like I had almost a million employees between 2020 and 2021. And now it's trying to shed them a little by little. So we understand that those kind of things have to happen, but how do you make it happen? Do you just send them email by 3 a.m. and tell them that don't come to work tomorrow, you've been logged out of your work account, or you don't even care about paying severance packages? On the long run, if it doesn't have an impact on your brand, it definitely have impact
on your source code.
you get it.
If you don't get it,
this is warning for everybody that is about to fire. So
yeah, I'm thinking of African startup founders. I want to fire their engineers. You don't know what these guys have access to.
There's nothing about paying off.
Is that why
you just have to do it properly?
Who? Which bank? All these banking apps, right? They've leaked the code, or they want to destroy. They've put else before if in his code.
Until you need them and everything scatters.
But you are saying there's nothing to lay now, like it's a normal thing.
It has come to stay as it were.
So, but okay, the issue with laying off, right? A company that operates in a lean model. You know, we were talking about in the last time where these startups, especially these big tech companies, were hiring people they didn't need to hire. Mm-hmm. They were acquiring companies and pushing those companies into the system to say, hey, we don't want you to build our next competitor, right? Mm-hmm. When that has been the model for a long while, when you are doing ambitious passion projects, why decide to lay off? The first thing that comes to your mind is layoff.
Because so I don't clear
the first
everybody.
Thing, see, when the first thing that comes to your mind when you start making money is hiring plenty of people. The first thing that will come to your mind
when you are losing money.
Yes, is to let go of those people. Because sometimes you just do it for, you just hire people for what's the word? Not for fun, just for the numbers. Yeah, for the numbers. And in a way, some people do it because they don't want the current employees to be overworked, which it's eventually going to turn back to, because the number of your customers that you supposedly got that time when you hired people, if they are going to reduce, it's not going to reduce in the same frequency as you are laying off. So at the end of the day, the current employees are going to be overworked.
But the idea is, with the advent of AI tools, Copilot, ChatGPT, GPT-4, blah, blah, and there's, I can't even keep up right now. There are so many, many of them.
Yeah.
The idea is one intermediate level engineer can handle a ton of tasks. One senior engineer no longer needs an intern or a junior engineer to shadow him. He just needs GPT-4, right? So that workload that you want to give 5 engineers, you can give ChatGPT or Copilot and to do it for you.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. Okay. But what I believe is that automation, what we think AI should be doing for us at this particular moment is actually what automation actually is doing when it comes to taking people's job, and that is doing repetitive work. When it has to do with creative work, right, you have to give this AI, because they cannot think exactly like, even though you are trying to build cognitive capabilities into them, right? Yeah. You have to train them to reach that level. You get, and a computer is as smart as who is using it. Yes. So if you go and put an intermediate person in the particular role, expecting the person to give GPT-4 a prompt that should bring you a very solid work, the person cannot do it beyond what they think.
I mean, prompt engineering is becoming a thing.
Yes, eventually.
Yeah.
But there's still a limit to what your capacity is, and it is what your capacity is that the AI builds on. So for now, I don't think we should be scared of AI trying to take away people's job in the real sense, especially when your work is not repetitive. If it has to do with being creative and thinking, the only thing it can do is supplement what you already have in your brain. That is just it. So I don't think, especially in Africa, I don't think it's something that we should be scared of. The laying off is because people don't have money. Pay the next salary.
Should African startups be scared that devs will lose, like, reveal sensitive information. I mean, there's a way Apple does it, right? In Apple, one of the reasons why they've been a very, very, very secretive company, you, unlike Google, where they release all, you know all the phones Google is about to release in the next 5 years, or Samsung. Everybody knew the specs of Samsung. But Apple kind of leaves you guessing. The occasional leaks, but how they do it is people don't work. No one person knows the entire big picture. Mm. You know that system now where everybody just knows a small part. They are just contributing to the big picture. So very, very, very select few.
What if you're not going to sack those select few?
Because that's how you have to be strategic in firing. The select
few are the ones that are doing the firing.
When was this thing wanted to fire? He has to speak to his managers. Who and who should we let go?
Mm.
You have to be strategic about it. You won't go and let go. If Amazon too.
I mean, it's common. If you're going to fire, you're the CEO of like a 3,000-person company. You definitely do not know everybody.
Yeah.
So if you wake up, except you want to do like maybe cast lots.
I said bulky mail.
This guy. His name starts with E. Let's sack everybody that their name starts with E. So if you want to do that, I'm going to deny you're gonna fire your chief engineer.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are cool ones, and those are interesting stories. So now let's do quick follow-ups on some stories from that we've talked about in previous weeks. There's a few weeks ago I talked about who is building the African GPT-4, and yeah, shout out to Abraham Augustine of Tech Cabal for an interesting story. The story was like, oh, Africa is not missing out on AI, you are not just noticing. And yeah, it was an interesting piece and some thought-provoking concepts. But my issue was the companies mentioned. Of all the companies mentioned there, InstaDeep is probably the only one I would actually lean towards saying that. Me, I know for a fact that one of the companies there is Bobo. But I can't say it out, obviously. But
they don't block
one of them
blocking is Bobo.
Mainland.
It's just really basic. There's no AI machine learning thing. Which is why, so far so good, if I see a startup pitching something and say they're using AI and machine learning, my alarm bells are ringing. Like, two, three things that makes my alarm bell ring in the ecosystem right now: blockchain, AI and machine learning. If I see deep learning, I can stone you. Then three, when everybody in the ecosystem is praising you, my alarm bells start ringing. If I see people praising you so much on Twitter, I'm like, Until I use the service, I won't believe that what you are doing is good. So, but yeah, I think I saw an interview with Semaphore. Alex talked with an executive at NVIDIA and mentioned Ghana NLP. So Ghana NLP is trying to build a platform to help analyze and recreate African languages. So Ghanaian languages and African languages in extension. So they're actually building.
I remember Abake Adenle.
Abake Adenle, yes. So
we have an article on that.
Yeah, check out the article on Abake. Then, of course, I saw pockets of different startups, really amazing startups that are doing interesting stuff with AI machine learning. There's Data Prophet, for instance, in South Africa. And I also met a lawyer who built an AI assistant based on ChatGPT. So you can integrate that AI assistant into your Microsoft Word document. So you can ask it to build a contract, build an MOU, write an MOU. That is just like the first step. You only still have to go and consult a lawyer to actually find out that, oh, hope there's nothing missing. Because a flaw with ChatGPT is it looks nice if you are not a subject matter expert. It looks very, very correct. But if you're a subject matter expert, you spot the difference. You spot it.
And sometimes, too, it gives you erroneous responses.
Yeah, it gives you erroneous responses.
You have to search.
So you're saying that subject matter experts should not be scared of.
Most likely no. But yeah, AI development across the region is going. And yeah, what I found out, I've looked at some companies, there are different organizations working on different machine learning models. What I found out was not enough for me to come and eat pepper on this podcast. But
so, what does that reference mean?
To take eat back pepper. Your words.
What does eat pepper mean?
No. I said
literally eat pepper.
If I find anybody, I said if I find anybody building the African GPT-4 mm-hmm. or GPT-3.5, mm-hmm. I will come and eat pepe on the podcast.
Oh, literally.
Literally eat pepe.
Okay.
Yes. So,
God, I would have
what's pepe? Red or?
Red pepe. Ah.
Jalapeno.
Not jalapeno, please. It's just rodo. Rodo.
Red body.
Small rodo. In fact, those big ones, I don't use the pepper too much. I didn't tell you the kind of pepper. But yeah, Ghana actually has a Google AI research lab and the Ghana NLP. But Ghana NLP, I wouldn't say it's on the same level as GPT-3 yet. Not even close. Not even, probably not. But it's even possible that they're even using GPT-3. To train these language models that they are building, right? So you can build on platforms like GPT-3. So yeah, most of the companies that are working in the AI space in Africa are not doing consumer facing stuff. They're doing enterprise level stuff. They're helping with marketing. But yeah,
I think it's our access to data. Sets us back.
Which is what Ghana NLP is doing.
Because that's what you can only... That's like the framework for any artificial intelligence you're building.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that, which is why I actually like what Ghana NLP is doing. The more focus is on actually building these data sets mm-hmm. so that you can use it to train these models, which for me, I think is very, very, very important. So yeah, that was the follow-up on GPT-4 and GPT-3.5. It was an interesting one. And of course, we mentioned that Kenya licensed some loan apps and digital service providers.
How many more?
10 more.
Ten more. It's an interesting one. Based on the chart that will be shown on your screen right now, you see that Kenya does not easily give licenses to fintech companies. You can look at all our stories on Corapay, Flutterwave. A lot of issues have come out because of this. But yeah. Check out, it's a very, very minute percentage of companies in Kenya that get licenses. And, well, what else? Our newsletters, don't forget to follow FinTech Today. We discuss all everything happening in FinTech. Don't forget to follow The Workaholic. As ironic as it sounds, it means you should be following The Workaholic for the latest gists. Why are you looking at me? For the latest gists on work. Everything work. HR, layoffs, everything. Just come and have this. Then you see the occasional experts that have built a really, really amazing career and you get to learn from them. And don't forget the Lagos Startup Expo, lagosstartupexpo.com. You're a founder and you want to really build an amazing customer base, an amazing and engaged customer base. Lagos Startup Expo is for you. And if you're a customer, come and discover the solution to your problems.
You sound like a preacher.
Come and discover the solution to your problems on Lagos Startup Expo. And yeah, please, you're watching this on YouTube, like, subscribe, and yeah, just do the whole thing. Share with your friends and well-wishers. And our audio lovers, please, you can find out those Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, and everywhere else you get your
Podcast Addict. Hi, Muyiwa. All right, see you guys in the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye.